So in case you haven't figured it out yet, we are observing the feast day of St. Michael and All Angels today, which is actually on Tuesday, but it's a worthy enough commemoration that we need to look at it today. But what are angels? And do we even believe that stuff anymore in this culture that we live in? Now, you know that 70% of our nation considers itself Christian. However, we are entering a time, as George Hunter has said, that has no Christian memory and no church to return to. George Barna has what he calls a post-Christian metric, which he defines in 15 points. Here are the first five. This post-Christian metric are those who, number one, don't believe in God. Number two, identify as atheist or agnostic. Number three, disagree that faith is important to their lives. Number four, have not prayed to God in the last year. And number five, have never made a commitment to Jesus Christ. Using that criteria and others, Barna posits that 44% of Americans are now post-Christian. And using his criteria for the city of Denver, that number goes up to 49%. And you've read, of course, the Pew Research reports on the rise of the nuns in our culture. That's not the ones in the black habits. These are the ones who, when given a choice on a survey, will check off the box for religious preference, none. So what do we do? And how do we even begin the discussion of the supernatural, the angels, all those things? Well, our readings give us some insights. And our task as Christians in the 21st century is one, to be an intersection between God and humanity. And two, to remember the smallest of the small. And lastly, to never fear. The intersection between God and humanity. I alluded to this last week, and I'm glad we had the reading today. Jacob was a man of many stories and dramatic encounters with God and others. Here we find him on his way to find himself a wife from the household of Laban, his uncle. He and his brother Esau were estranged. And we find Jacob obeying his father Isaac's words to marry from amongst his own people, while Esau was off marrying among the household of Ishmael. So Jacob is on an important, but somewhat routine trip. He is following ancient Hebrew custom on the road to start his new life. His trip is not out of the ordinary. However, during that time, the gate of heaven was opened. As he slept, he fell asleep. He dreamed that there was a ladder set up on the earth, the top of it reaching heaven, and the angels of God were ascending and descending on it. And the Lord stood beside him and said, "I am the Lord, the God of Abraham, your father, and of Isaac. The land on which you lie I will give to you. Know that I am with you and keep you wherever you go." Jacob awoke and was afraid. Now, oftentimes when we encounter God, we are afraid. And it's not because God is fearful. It's not because God's out to get us. It's because God is wholly other, different from us. Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven. How many people have sat in our pews, whether we know it or not, and have left this place and said, "Surely God is in this place"? That might come as a surprise to us, but it shouldn't. This is what we're here for. Jacob saw the presence of angels. And is this not what we say every single week, joining our voices with angels and archangels and all the company of heaven? We are here to meet with God. Benedict's words again. A Christian community needs to have a constant exchange between heaven and earth. Secondly, an interesting passage from Matthew 18, talking again about the smallest of the small. It's a short story, but very profound. Jesus takes a child in his arms, and this is actually the same gospel as last week's from Mark, but Matthew expands on it. Remember, these children are the smallest of the small. They have no reputation. They're powerless. They have no status to speak of. And Jesus says, when you welcome them, you welcome me. When you encounter those who are the least of these, you encounter me. And then Matthew says, you yourself must become like a child. Now, he's not talking about being naive. He's talking about the wonder, the wonder in life that a child has. If you've ever watched a kid play in the yard, it's like they've never seen anything like it before. They just have this openness, looking at all the bugs and all the trees and all the leaves and all the dirt and all the worms. Jacob always comes with some kind of dead bug in his hand, usually carries it around until it dies. But it's wonder is what it is. It's an openness. But it's here that Jesus makes a comment that seems to say that individuals have guardian angels. And I actually changed the gospel today because I like how this puts it. I tell you, in heaven, their angels continually see the face of my Father in heaven. Their angels. Fascinating. I'm not sure if we have a guardian angel. This seems to say that we do. But what is Jesus' point? It's that heaven cares for the smallest of the small. That the angels of God speak to the Lord on behalf of the children of men. Those in our world who have no voice, who are the weakest of the weak. Last week I mentioned the two models of North American Anglicanism. The first one was the grouchy expat. And that is, this is the English church, by golly, and it will remain the English church. And you'll buy that pew, you'll pay a good price for it, but you see now the front rows we can't give away. But positively, I should also mention the Wesley model, the Jackson Kemper model. Wesley took the altar of God into the fields, into the forests, to be with the people who otherwise would never darken the doors of a church. Bishop Kemper created sacred spaces and places of learning, like Neshota House, to be for the people of the Midwest and the frontier. He had much of the liturgy translated into the languages of the Native Americans. Neither Wesley nor Kemper compromised the beauty of classical Anglican theology and worship. But they understood it's not just for them, but for the people living and walking and working and sweating on the frontier. Whether they could buy a pew was irrelevant. Did they know the living God? That was the most important question. If you look at the end of the book, St. John describes a church worshiping at the throne of God from every tribe and every nation. We have the opportunity to have a church just like that. And we do in many ways, which is exciting. Getting back to angels. St. Gabriel the Archangel. We have St. Michael, who is kind of the captain of the armies of the angels of God. And then we have St. Gabriel. And he's a fascinating figure because he appears to be one that is right in the presence of God at all times. Kind of taking notes, kind of listening, kind of the one who takes from heaven and goes and announces to earth. Gabriel, of course, was the one who made the announcement to the Virgin Mary that she was going to give birth. And he tells her two very important things. Number one, don't be afraid. And number two, nothing will be impossible with God. Nothing will be impossible with God. If we live in a world that does not believe, and we have the responsibility to take the gospel out, to proclaim to all the world, nothing will be impossible with God. We are not here for the survival of an institution, but for the propagation of the gospel. We live in a very jaded time. We've forgotten that, as Gerard Manley Hopkins says, the world is charged with the glory of God. But the very fact that we have a celebration for angels, God's messengers, means that we assume that this world is charged with the divine. We just need to put aside our distractions. Hermann Hesse says, life is waiting everywhere, flowering everywhere, but we only see a small part of it and trample much of it with our feet. Our faith teaches that God became one of us to make all things new. Nothing is impossible with God. When we are following Jesus so close that, as one person has said, we are covered in the dust of the rabbi, nothing is impossible with God. When we focus on worship and discipleship, nothing is impossible with God. When we proclaim the gospel without compromise, nothing will be impossible with God. Do not be afraid, as the angel says, but embrace the challenge of proclaiming Christ to a world who desperately needs him. For nothing will be impossible with God. Amen.